Hello. In this audio snippet, we would like to continue talking about the state of music in America and the world, I guess, in a more general sense. We had started before talking about this, about the day the music died, or the day the music went nowhere, as we were describing it. But before we continue with that, we would like to share some headlines about recent stories, and they are to kind of confirm or highlight things that we've been talking about, and they're all in general very sad and negative things. But I believe they need to be pointed out any which way. I know that America is dead. It died, as we've said many times, on the 6th of September, and it completed its death on the 18th of September and had its brain death, you could say, where its head was completely cut off on the 8th of September of 2023. So we're talking about... we're kind of talking about a dead person now. That's the way we can visualize it. But even though the person is dead, we still need to talk about what led to the death of that person and the consequences of that death. You know, where we are now because of that death. And that's why that's in part, I believe, why we need to talk about these headlines anyway. So the first headline that we'd like to talk about was posted on the Gateway, thegatewaypundit.com, that website that we refer to a great deal. And it was posted on the 10th of November, 2023, so that's one day before the day of this recording. And the headline reads, new poll finds Trump leading Bite Me in most swing states and on top issues. So they go into this detail of this poll and all that. I'm not going to go into the details of that because that is relatively irrelevant. The point is that, and they just give the numbers and you know, break down the polls and that's it. And at the end, well, there's a slight comment a small comment that says, the election is still a long way off, but this is a good sign. And you read that and you go, what? what is the point of all these polls? We're acting as if we were back in 1984 or 1993, you know, it's a lot days, the days when polls really mattered. We're not there anymore. The country's dead. And we are now in a third world environment because America is now a third world country where elections are just kind of part of a show. And with all the election fraud going on, what's the point of Trump leading? We all know that Trump won in 2020. That's the reality. And you can see it. The evidence of that is clear, not only because of the actual evidence of fraud, but because of the popularity of each candidate. You can see, you know, who draws the crowds, who draws the attention. It's clear that he won. But it was irrelevant because the system has already been modified so that they will always add enough votes to compensate any deficit and win eventually. And the system is so broken because of the founding fathers and all the things we've said before, how the Constitution and the whole political system and federalism has enabled this corruption. So there is no point in the polls. So it's why even quote polls? It's living in la la land, as if to think that somehow this is going to change. So it's like you can't have your pastry and eat it too. Like, was there fraud in 2020, in 2022? Yes or no? If there wasn't any fraud, then why are you complaining about it all the time? But if there was, why do you give any value to polls, to poll numbers? What is the point? Yeah, Trump could be well ahead of Bidby, and I have no doubt about that in swing states, and he would win if the votes were counted correctly. But it doesn't matter anymore, and no one is really focusing on the issue, the root issue of how do we resolve this. And that same frustration is also voiced by a lot of the people who posted comments on this article, saying, it doesn't really matter if and so forth. But as I read through the comments, no one really got to the heart of the matter. And as we've said a million times before, the heart of the matter is in the Constitution, written by the moronic founding fathers who did not understand the full truth, who were not in contact with the full truth. They only had a part of it, and they thought it was the whole thing. In the Constitution, they left this clause that said that the states were the ones who run elections. They are the ones who decide the procedures and the regulations, the rules of elections, and not just local elections, elections in general. And that's why one state has machines, another state has something else, and they have all. We have this just a hodgepodge of mechanisms throughout the country. Every state runs the election their own way, and they have their own regulations, their own rules, their own procedures, and that lends itself to local corruption. When you can localize the process, then the party that controls the local process can manipulate it to its own advantage. And that's exactly what's been going on. And it becomes difficult to control because it's like a whack-a-mole. You have to go fight in each state and whack the mole there, and then it pops up in another state, and then you have to whack the mole there, because there is no we it, after 247 years, we never bothered to set up a standard, a very professional national standard of how elections should be run, how can they be audited, how and what happens if there is fraud or a strong probability of fraud or irregularities, as they say. What do we do then? Do we repeat the election? How do we repeat the election? Those things should have been worked out, and to work that out, we should have a long time ago done away with that clause in the Constitution that localizes the power to regulate elections. But no one wants to go there. Everybody who complains about fraud is pro-Constitution, pro-founding fathers, and they light up the candles to Madison and Washington and Jefferson and all these people. So they would never, ever dare to say there's something wrong with the Constitution. But the problem it starts right there. And then it goes much deeper. So many other things that need to be changed in order to finally end all of this madness. But no one is going there because, the country's dead. People don't. The American people in general don't care about the root of the problem. They just complain about the symptoms and never get to the heart of it. And they live in this fantasy world where they try to kind of see lights of hope, like this guy who wrote this article about the new poll, these lights of hope because they don't want to admit the country's dead. Because they don't want to go to where they need to go to change the country. Now it's too late. Even if they change their minds right now, it's too late. it's all over. But they still keep living in this fantasy land where, no, things are not that bad. So the polls do matter, because I just want to have a little bit of hope that the whole thing is not over yet. So that's one story we wanted to mention. And then another related story that was posted, a link to it was posted on the citizenfreepress.com, and it links to a Twitter post, or X, or I still call it Twitter. I'm not sure. X is probably the dumbest name in history for a website. What does that mean? But the thing is that on Twitter, they had a post here from the Citizen Free Press, from their account on Twitter, and it says, "This woman is in charge of voting for the largest city in Connecticut. She has no idea of the laws on mail-in ballots. This is how elections are stolen. We have to end all absentee ballots except in extreme circumstances." And then they have a video of a lady talking. So she's a black lady who was in charge of voting in the largest city in Connecticut. I'm not sure which one that is. That Stamford, Connecticut? I'm not sure. I should know this maybe, but it's some city in Connecticut. And she has no ideas on the laws on mail-in ballots. And they're talking about the need to end that. But that's good. Okay, he's the person who posted this. I think his name is Kane. He is trying to get to the heart of the matter, but he doesn't go far enough, because, okay, we deal with the problem of mail-in ballots in Connecticut. Then we have to go deal with the problem in Georgia. And then we have to deal with it in Michigan. We have to deal with it in California. And then in every single state, we have to go fight the same battle over and over again. And there's no conversation in the country about this issue. The Republicans are mostly silent on it. A few complain about the fraud. The few who are brave enough, or who are smart enough, or not stupid enough to see the reality, they complain about it, but no one is really talking about how do we deal with this. How do we make sure that there is no question who really won an election? No one cares. So we just wanted to point that out. And the next story we wanted to share on is the link here is to a it's like the link is to a website that remembers content on the internet. So let me just go to it right now. It's webcache.googleusercontent.com. And it has the content of a Washington Post story. So, and I just want to read a few parts of it very quickly, because I don't like to read the Washington Post. And ironically, they have a subtitle underneath the Washington Post that says, "Democracy dies in darkness." And they are kind of like part of the darkness. Which is so ironic. So, okay. So the headline says, "Momentum behind impeachment inquiry slows under new speaker." The inquiry stagnated during the 3-week fight to elect a new speaker. Now, James Comer has sent out new subpoenas. As Speaker Mike Johnson strikes a more reserved tone. So as you may know, if you've been following, stupid politics recently, that they took out Kevin McCarthy, and then they had a long fight to find someone, and the best they could come up with is this guy who's supposedly conservative, pro-Trump, whatever, Mike Johnson from who knows where. And then it turns out the guy is now kind of like, "Oh, let's not impeach, bite me." And I believe somewhere in this article they mentioned that, well, someone says, quote, "We'll just go nowhere. We'll just go where the evidence goes, and we're not there yet," unquote. Representative Don Bacon, Republican of Nebraska, said, paraphrasing Johnson's comments on the inquiry at the Republican Governance Group's weekly lunch on Tuesday. "Most of us are saying, look, we can't even get a single Democratic vote on this right now. I think the voters will reject what they're seeing when it comes to bite me policies. But high crimes and misdemeanors, I don't think we've seen that or enough data to really make a good case. And I feel like Johnson really agreed with us on that." And I think somewhere in the article, I think, if I'm not mistaken, they mentioned that apparently Mike Johnson and the Republicans don't want to go there now because they see the poll numbers, see the poll numbers that we were talking about. And they believe that they make Bite Me look very weak. So they are saying, why even try to go after him? He's going to go down on his own. So let him fall on his own, and let's not do anything about it. So see, these people are playing politics. First of all, they're listening to the polls as if they mattered. As we said a moment ago, that's very naive and stupid. But on top of that, it doesn't matter if he's down in the polls. It's as if to say, you know, someone kills someone else, and. Let's say that a mayor of a city kills someone, murders his wife, and then the people on the opposite party go, well, you know, we should this guy should be indicted for having murdered his wife, or being very strongly suspected of murdering his wife, and the evidence is very strong against him. And someone saying, well, no, let's not even go there because he's going to lose the election. He's very unpopular. His policies are not working out. So he let him just lose the election and we'll move on. But what about the dead woman? What about the dead woman? Doesn't matter if his polls are up or down. The woman is still dead. Same, by the same token, Bite Me has been committing all these flagrant crimes of corruption and taking bribes and selling political power, and no one's going to do a thing about it. Even if he doesn't win an election, I mean, he'll probably be dead by 2024, at the end by the election of 2024. But it doesn't matter any which way. No message is sent out to anyone that, oh, that if you do this, then you're going to get punished. No, let's just play politics with it, because if we start going after him, then he's going to become the victim, and then we're going to help him in the polls. See, they're all thinking like that. No one is thinking, well, it doesn't matter what happens or doesn't happen. This guy committed a crime. He has to be held accountable for it. And it doesn't matter if it hurts us politically or helps us politically. It's not a matter. It's like the same thing as with the dead woman that we were saying a moment ago. The woman is still dead. It doesn't matter if it hurts me politically to go after the mayor. The mayor killed someone. Then you have to go after him because he has violated a trust and a right, a human right. And this man is a thief. This Bite Me fellow. It's a corrupt, worthless thief, and he has to at least be prosecuted. Even if the prosecution doesn't win, you have to go after him. The evidence is very, very powerful against him. So that's another example of, you know, where we are right now. And so all the conservatives were happy when Mike Johnson got elected as Speaker of the House. As if we said before, we should never have a Speaker of the House. That was another stupid idea by the founding fathers, another blood power clot that we have in the system. But aside from that, see, we all keep like looking for these lights of hope. Oh yeah, things are going to be fine now. And then turns out this guy's like the same thing, you know, like everybody else. So it really doesn't matter. So now I would like to also share another story that talks about the state of things. posted on thegatewaypundit.com, and it was posted on the 7th of November, 2023, a few days ago, and it says, breaking, Ohio voters approve issue one, which legalizes killing babies and abortion up until birth. Now, by the way, we had a election day, quote unquote, and I say that, you know, with big air quotes, in the U.S. On the 7th of November, this past Tuesday, I didn't care who won, who lost. It doesn't matter anymore. It really does not matter. So I could not have cared less. The thing is that I found it interesting that on that night, I was just curious to see if there was some red wave of Republican victories all over the place, you know, especially because the polls are so clear about Bite Me being unpopular, supposedly, and his policies not working well. All I heard was crickets. In all the conservative websites that I visit, nothing about what happened on that election night, and I found that so strange. And then I had to find out by chance, reading something else, that turns out that apparently Republicans had a very bad night that night. So why didn't they even bother to mention that on the conservative websites? Why didn't they want to even admit it, that they had a bad night? And I'm pretty sure that there was a lot of fraud going on. And it, as I said, it really does not matter. The elections are just a show now. Because we're in a third world country now. And it's not being cynical, it's just being realistic. That's where we are now, unfortunately. And the thing is that I find it ironic that the conservatives didn't even bother to say we had a bad night at the election, at the polls today or something like that. Nothing. And if they had a good day, they would have been just repeating it over and over and over again. But it's because they don't want to admit the country is dead. They don't want to see the reality, so they don't want to speak it out and admit it. But the thing is that one of the things that happened that day was that Ohio voters, as we read a moment ago, approved an issue that legalizes abortion. And they also, by the way, legalized cannabis. So I'm going to read here. On Tuesday, Ohio Democrats have given a thumbs up to issue one, which enshrines the right to an abortion within the state constitution. Within the state constitution. It's not just a law. It's now in the constitution of the state of the stupid state of Ohio. Following the Supreme Court's reversal of Roe v. Wade in June, Ohio's abortion restriction, which prohibits the procedure after 6 weeks without exceptions for cases of rape or incest, was enacted. Ohio's woke medical professionals and advocates for abortion initiated efforts to place Issue 1 on the voting ballot. Ohio Issue 1, also known as the Right to Make Reproductive Decisions, including Abortion Initiative, is a ballot measure that would add a constitutional right to abortion and other reproductive health care in Ohio. So they keep talking about it, but the thing is, the issue passed, and along with that, they also, I don't think they mentioned it here, but I did read it somewhere that they also legalized cannabis in Ohio along with this. And Ohio is supposedly a relatively red state. Sometimes it swings a little bit. But I've always found there are two states that I, you know, when the word traitor comes to me and you say, okay, say a state. If someone says traitor and then asks me, say the name of a state, I have to say, first, Tennessee. I don't know why. I've always seen Tennessee as the epitome of treachery. I don't know why. I can't really say, pinpoint it. But Tennessee is treason to me. As someone who betrays who backstabs Tennessee comes first. I don't know why. And that's where Andrew Johnson kind of surged out from. He was not born in Tennessee, but he became a Tennessean by heart. Eventually, he was the guy who followed Lincoln in the White House, the horrible president who did so much damage to the country. But there's several other reasons that kind of make me think about Tennessee being a state of traitors. And then the other state that comes to my mind is Ohio. Ohio is a state of traitors, of people who pretend to be for the truth, but at the end of the day, they back down and don't and turn around. It's like they just do the thing that a lot of Americans have done with the truth. They tell the truth, we believe it in the truth. We are going to do all in our power to enable the truth. And then at the last minute, when it comes to making the sacrifice that's needed to enable the truth, they always turn their back and walk away. And Ohio is the epitome of that. I do have to say that Ohio was very important in 2004 in reelecting Bush. It was that state, which by a small margin went for Bush instead of John Kerry, that allowed Bush to take a second term. And that allowed Bush to be the last president of the United States instead of Kerry, which would have been very tragic. So in that sense, they did kind of save the day, but by a close margin. And to me, the thing goes like, it should not have even been close, but they made it close, but at least they sided on the right side by electing Bush over Kerry. And that's the last good thing they've done. And ever since then, it's been downhill ever since. And they have manifested the treachery in them. And the person that we want to talk about that we have not mentioned, that we've not gotten to, the person who we were going to talk about after Thaddeus Stevens, is a person from Ohio and born in Cuyahoga, county in Ohio, which kind of goes with the Fire Lake theme that we were talking about, the song and the Cuyahoga River, as we mentioned before. But the reason, one of the reasons that I wanted to mention this headline is that it highlights the fact that the country's dead. Ohio, which is more or less a red state, has just not only legalized abortion, now they've put it in the Constitution, the state Constitution. And why can they put that in the state Constitution? Because the federal Constitution doesn't have anything to protect human life. Nothing. Not even the life of the born. We've said this a million times. And no one, makes the association of, okay, we have the right to life is not reflected or defined or protected in the American Constitution. So let's do something about it, because no one goes there. No one in their head in the conservative world goes to that place where they want to, where they have to question the founding fathers or the Constitution. Because, you don't question God, right? You don't question God Almighty. So whenever you find people that say you don't question this, then you can clearly say from there, without a doubt, that's their God, because you never question your God, and you can apply that also to liberals and their ideology, because they never question their ideology, however contradictory it is, however false it is when compared to the facts, they just never question it. And they always twist the truth to make their ideology correct. If they have to make 2 + 2 = 5 for their ideological equation to work, they will do that because that's their God. And the same with the conservatives. They never go to that place where they go, okay, let's question this Constitution thing. Because to them, it's God who wrote the Constitution. So questioning the Constitution is like questioning God. It's their God. But so this is like, there is no place to hide. The country's dead, no matter where you go, where even Ohio is now legalizing abortion in their constitution and also legalizing cannabis. And I would dare say that most of that the vote, I'm pretty sure. Oh, and by the way, this was not just a, like a 51 to 49% result. This was apparently a clear majority for abortion and cannabis. And I dare say that a significant number of that majority came from Cuyahoga County, because that's Cleveland. That's where Cleveland is, and Cleveland is, I think it's the second largest city and population-wise in Ohio. I think after Columbus, if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong. It's Columbus, Cleveland, and Cincinnati. They all start with C for some reason. They're the three big cities in Ohio, and so Cleveland, I think, is number two. And it has a large black population. It's very Democrat run. It's Democrat controlled. And I'm pretty sure that that was a big part of why abortion was passed so overwhelmingly. I don't have the numbers, but I would not be surprised if 80% of people in Cuyahoga County voted for abortion and cannabis. It's a very Democrat-controlled region of the country, and Cleveland, as we said, has a very significant black population, and as we've shared before, I may have this number incorrectly, but I more or less remember that I think it was like around 38% of all abortions are performed are committed by black women. So black women commit 38% of the abortions, and the correct term is commit. You know, just like somebody commits a crime, commits a robbery, commits a murder, then the same thing with abortion. So 38% of black of abortions are committed by black women, and I could be wrong with that number, but whatever the exact number may be, it is for sure much higher proportionally compared to the percentage of the black population, because the black population is around 11 to 13% of the country in America. And so 38%, whatever the number, exact number is much higher than the population, the percentage of the population that black people represent in America. So that means that there's a disproportionate liking to killing fetuses amongst black people, much higher than the rest of the population, and therefore it would not be surprising that in Cleveland, a lot of people voted for abortion because of the large black population. And that's a problem that I've never really heard black preachers talk about. That the Christian black preachers, they're all, you know, dancing and saying hallelujah and all that, but they never really talk about this or call out black people for killing them their own unborn fetuses. It is so sad. It's part of that cannibalism that we've talked about. That's why they were judged and brought in chains to America as judgment to pay the debt. And once the debt was paid, they were supposed to be set free. But then we made slavery permanent, and that's led to another problem. But that doesn't take away from the original issue that that black people have not fully dealt with, that cannibalism, that self eating of each other, and that's reflected in the abortion issue. So we wanted to say that the country is indeed dead. And just as a quick note, without going into much detail, there was a story on the Daily Mail about a man. here in New York who was apprehended, a guy named John Rote, who was shot at a homeless robber who attacked a woman inside the subway. And the suspect, I'm reading the headline, arrested at his desk at his New York City office job after a friend tipped off the cops. So what happened was that he was at well, let me read the article very quickly, a part of it. This is from the Daily Mail, posted on the 9th of November, 2023. An office worker turned vigilante gunman was arrested at his desk on Wednesday, hours after trying to stop a robbery on the New York subway with a hail of bullets. John Rote, 43, was seized at his Manhattan workplace after a tip-off from a friend who recognized him as the portly gunman who intervened when a woman was attacked at Times Square on Tuesday. Shocking video footage shows the gunman reach into his rucksack for a handgun after the attacker ignored his warning to leave her alone. He fired off a first shot, then began shouting as he approached the attacker before firing a second time and charging towards the incident. I want to be clear, and this is what I wanted to get to. This is a quote. I want to be clear. We don't tolerate this kind of conduct in New York City transit, period. Unquote, said City Transit President Richard Davey after the arrest. So the thing is that, and the suspected homeless robber has been identified as Matthew Roche, 49, and has been charged with attempted robbery. Officials believe he was trying to, quote, forcibly snatch a 40-year-old woman's belongings last night. At that moment, the suspected gunman intervened and fired shots at Roche, according to officials. The incident happened at 49th Street, NR&W, in the Times Square subway station. So the woman remains unidentified by the police and has not commented on the incident. Roche has been staying at a homeless shelter at Bellevue Hospital in Kips Bay and was taken to a hospital for a checkup after the incident. So he was taken to the hospital, not to jail, but to a hospital because he must be mentally unstable. That's why he's robbing people. Yeah, it says here, Davey explained that Roche is allegedly a swiper, a person who swipes people through MetroCard turnstiles for tips and is known to the police. So the ironic thing is this guy fired the shots, but he didn't really hit the guy. He just fired the shots and apparently scared him away, or who knows what happened. Oh, and this, it says here, he has been arrested once before, the fellow Matthew, for theft of service at the Times Square West 42nd Street station on September the 18th. This is the day America died and finished his death. On September the 18th, this guy was arrested. So this is all, and I know this date was put there just to emphasize the connection to the death of America. So now, the guy who fired the shots to help a woman to not be robbed, he's the one arrested. Even though he didn't hit anyone, he didn't kill the robber, he didn't do anything. He was just firing the shots to scare off the robber. And now he is the criminal, and now the bold statement, you know, we don't tolerate that behavior, period. How many times have I heard them saying something similar about all the crime going on now in the New York subway system? How many times have they ever said, we don't tolerate this kind of criminal behavior in our subway system, period? No. See the way things are now in this country, and we've said this before, that the country is now turned into a dangerous place where the just are the ones who are going to be punished if they try to enforce justice and righteousness, and the unrighteous are just going to be coddled and taken to hospital and given support because they must be like this because of something bad that happened to them in their childhood, whatever. They are coddled and supported and enabled, and the righteous are the ones who are attacked and imprisoned. That's the state of the country now because we are in a third world country. And the last thing we wanted to mention before we try to get to the actual thing we wanted to talk about is this article, again, on the Gateway Pundit. And it says, RAV, that must be an organization, I'm not sure what that stands for. RAV's Ben Burkholm confronts cartel members at the southern border. This was posted on the 10th of November, the day before this recording, 2023. I've seen this Ben Burkholm before. He's done videos like here. He came to the New York area and he was in front of the Row Hotel. It's a hotel on between 44th and 45th Streets on 8th Avenue in Manhattan. And the street numbers are very relevant, but too long to explain. The thing is that he showed the building in this video, and it's a 27-story building. And he said that the whole hotel, Row Hotel, is called the Row. It should be called the Row, the way I see it. But the thing is, the Row Hotel is full of migrants, of illegal immigrants. They have, the city of New York is paying for all the rooms in that hotel just to house illegal aliens. And he was showing how... now the illegal aliens are stealing scooters and taking off the license plates, they have their bikes occupying space where it shouldn't be and all that. And he was showing that. As he was showing that, one of the guys, he was filming, and as he was filming with his mobile phone, a Hispanic, he said in Spanish, and I could make out what he was saying. He said, "If you keep filming, he literally said it. I'm going to steal your mobile." That's literally what he said, in Spanish, as the guy was filming him. I mean, that's how blatant they are now. And it just shows the spirit of these people, the mindset, just the evil that oozes out of them. That's what we're allowing into the country. But he was talking about all this, and now he has this story about, he went to the border and he was talking about all that's going on there. I believe this is being said by the writer of the article, David Grayson. He said, "This should be a wake-up call to America, how bad the situation really is. Every day, we are watching the demise of a great nation. Where is the mainstream media and the federal government? They simply don't care. These are globalists who want to destroy America and impoverish and demoralize Americans because they hate us." And then they show the cartel, you know, going in through the border and all that. But what I found interesting is that statement, "This should be a wake-up call to see how bad the situation really is. Every day we're watching the demise of a great nation." And when I read that, I felt bad for him, because I wanted to say to him, I'm sorry, we're not watching the demise of a great nation. The nation is already dead. We're not seeing it dying. It's already dead. And then when he said the federal government, that kind of like woke me up again, like stirred my anger, because why do we have this problem? Because we have all this local sectionalized government system that's brought on by the federal system, where the federal government's given the responsibility, and they have the jurisdiction to enforce immigration laws, but it should never be like that. A law is a law is a law, and it should apply at all levels of government. That's why federalism is such a destructive government system. It's so stupid. The founding fathers are so stupid for having enabled that system that grew out of empirical circumstances, but they never said, "This is wrong, we have to end this." Instead, they praised it and made it permanent. They locked it in place. And as some of you may know, a lot of the inspiration of federalism came from the Iroquois tribes, the Amerindian tribes in New York. And so um, so we're taking an example from a culture that didn't succeed too well. But that's another story. The thing is that the federal government is the only one that can enforce immigration laws, and it shouldn't be like that. If you break the law, then a city cop should be able to enforce the law on you. So that means that state government, see the irony, that state governments who demand power and sovereignty and all that, they can't do a single thing about an illegal alien entering their country. The state of Texas should have the freedom to take an illegal alien and deport them back to Mexico and put them on the other side of the fence of the border and say, hey, out of here. But no, they have to defer to the federal system. Why doesn't anyone look at all this and say there's something very dysfunctional about all of this? But they don't see it. They just don't want to see it. Because again, if you start seeing it, then you have to start saying the founding fathers made mistakes, and God forbid that you dare say something like that. Because their God are the founding fathers. They have idols in their hearts. So now that we have said all of that, let's start talking a little bit about music. I know that it seems like we're wasting time beating a dead horse, but it needs to be said. I do believe that it needs to be emphasized, and the judgments are increased as we say these things. Because we are living in a world where people are still living in a fantasy, no one's dealing with the roots, and it just propagates and propagates and propagates, and the judgments need to be released against all of that, because we are living the consequences of that, and the consequences are diminished as we judge these things, even though we can't prevent it, because it's the will of the people. That's what they want, so we can't stop that. But as we continue speaking out these things, we are kind of stemming the tide a little bit and preventing it affecting us too much. So we have to speak these things out. So now I wanted to mention one thing before we talk about music in greater detail. It's one thing that we had not mentioned before, and I believe it's worth mentioning. When I was trying to understand why Taylor Swift was so popular, and I went to her Wikipedia article to see, you know, more about her. One thing that drew my attention was that it said that there's just one sentence, very brief sentence. She is a Christian, and that's all it says. No explanation, no more details, but they do provide a footnote, a reference to where they got that statement from or that idea from. And when I clicked on that reference, it sent me to this place called relevantmagazine.com. And the title, it was posted on January 31st, 2020. So that's a long time ago. Well, it feels like a long time ago. These last few years have felt like forever. And it says, the headline says, Taylor Swift on politicians co-opting faith, quote, I'm a Christian. That's not what we stand for, unquote. So Taylor Swift saying, I'm a Christian, and that's not what we stand for. And apparently, it says here, Taylor Swift's new Netflix documentary, Miss Americana. And that's interesting that that was the name of the documentary, Miss Americana, because now she represents American music. She represents the state of American music. And that's why we're talking so much about her. And that goes to even greater, not just music, it just talks about the state of America in general and its culture and its value system and everything. So she is Miss Americana now. So the documentary is about a lot more than the usual rise to fame narrative that tends to dominate this genre. Instead, it's about a very specific evolution of her public brand from being a tidy, safe, one-dimensional pop star to something more complex, nuanced, and human. A big part of that evolution was the 2018 midterm election when Swift went back to home to Tennessee, you know, the traitor state, to publicly endorse one-time Governor Phil Bredesen, whatever, however you pronounce it, over his Republican challenger, Marsha Blackburn, for the U.S. Senate. Bredesen would ultimately lose. Now, one clip making the rounds shows Swift's fight over the endorsement with her management team, who urged her to keep quiet about social and political issues. Swift is clearly distraught and emotional, insisting that she wants to be, quote, on the right side of history, while her team, including her father, tries to talk her down, bringing up publicity and security concerns. And, you know, some people saying, oh, you want to reduce your audience in half in your concerts by doing this? And you want the headline to say Taylor Swift comes out against Trump and all that. And then she says, I don't care if they write that, Swift insists. Soon after, she breaks down in tears, saying, it's really a big deal to me. And then she says, I can't see another commercial and see Blackburn disguising these policies behind the words Tennessee Christian values, Swift says. Those aren't Tennessee Christian values. I live in Tennessee. I'm a Christian. That's not what we stand for. And then it says you can watch the whole clip below. They have a link to that and all that. So we're talking about a person who says she's a Christian. And interestingly, in her Wikipedia article, they talk about her fight for the rights of homosexuals and transsexuals to, you know, the right to what? I'm not too sure about what when they say rights of, like, what. Are they being killed? Are they being deprived of jobs because of their orientation, sexual inclinations, or whatever we want to call it? What are they being chased down on the streets by homophobic thugs? What rights are they talking about? But the thing is that this Christian lady is, you know, supporting that. So if you're a Christian, I mean, if you don't believe in the Bible and all that, then just, if you don't think God exists or you think the Bible is full of errors and it's all a big mistake, then don't be a Christian. Just be an atheist. Be whatever you want to be. But don't, see, if you're going to stand for something, be consistent about it. You know, if you believe this. You know, don't just pick and choose and try to give it a name and pretend to yourself that you're not that you know, pretend to yourself that you are a consistent person. I mean, if you stand for something, stand for something. If you don't stand for something, then don't stand for it. But don't play that game. That's what I find annoying. When people are not consistent, and they publicly expose their inconsistency and don't see anything wrong with it, so, but she's supposedly a Christian. And I don't know. I there's something about her that made me think that she had something about that, you know. A certain Christian aura about her, but I did believe that it was important to mention that. So now another article that we wanted to mention regarding Taylor Swift was posted on the 27th of October, 2023, on thedailymail.com once again. And the headline says, Taylor Swift's new version of her album, 1989, is a pop masterpiece revamped and better than ever, writes Adrian Thrills, whoever he is. We're just going to read a few parts to that article. It says, her astonishing work ethic has been putting most other musicians on the planet to shame for years, and Taylor Swift continues to reign as pop's most prolific singer-songwriter. Her Eras Tour is set to become the most lucrative in history. Its film spinoff is shattering box office records, and this year has already seen her re-record one of her early LPs in Speak Now, Taylor's version. Now she's back with her second revamp of 2023, expanded version of her best-selling album, 1989. Named after the year she was born, it sealed her move from country to pop in 2014, replacing Nashville banjos and songs about high school crushes with 1980s-style electronics and grown-up lyrics. It sent her career stratospheric. Swift 33 is re-recording her first six LPs over a rights ownership issue, skillfully replicating the original arrangements. The reason why I wanted to mention this is two or threefold. For one, it shows what is going to be the future of America. It's just rehashing old stuff, and because the creativity is gone, during that September 6th through 18th period, the blessing of creativity that was on this country was taken away and was killed off. So now we will see this increasing tendency to just repeat things from the past, just repeat and rehash. And we've been seeing this tendency for years, but now it's permanent and forever. And that's why she is repeating albums from the past. And then she's doing it over rights ownership issue, but the principle still stands that we're going to be seeing that. So the second reason we wanted to mention this is the fact that she named it 1989, and when I saw that name, my first thought was, oh, maybe she named it after the Berlin Wall, because that was the year the Berlin Wall came down. For all those of us who are old enough to live through that time period, when most people think of 1989, I would dare say, I mean, maybe not in America, but in civilized countries, the first thing that would come to most people's minds who are old enough is the Berlin Wall coming down. Maybe the second thing that you would think of, but maybe that's more in America, would be that was the year of the big earthquake in San Francisco, and coincidentally the World Series was being played between two teams on the Bay in the Bay Area, San Francisco and Oakland, which are right next to each other, and there was this big earthquake before a game. I think it was a World Series game. And so that's what I think, the two things I think of, well, and other personal things in my life, but that was a very bad year for me. But aside from that, on the global level, those are the two things that I can think of. And I thought that was her motivation, 1989, the year the Berlin Wall came down, and oh, maybe she's has this awareness about, the oppression of communism and the freedom that came when the Berlin Wall came down. Well, it turns out it wasn't because of any of that. It's because that was the year she was born. And that goes to that very thing that we were mentioning before, that when you get into her music, you get into her world and you become trapped in there. So it's not a music that takes you out and projects you to see the world. Unlike this song Right Here, Right Now by Jesus Jones, if you've ever heard it, that came out around 1990, if I remember correctly, which was a song that talked about, when I would hear it, I would immediately think of the Berlin Wall and the freedom and the change that came over Eastern Europe. So that song would take you out to that and make you visualize the freedom and all these things that were happening. But Taylor Swift, even when the title of the album is that year that was so important, she doesn't take you to that year, to the important things in the world that happened that year. It takes you to things about her life, and not the world. That's the difference with her music. And the other thing I did want to mention, and that's very, to me, very important when you think about Taylor Swift, is her work ethic. You know, I think she was going to be or has become the first billionaire in music history. But I mean, billionaire who has made her $1 billion on music alone, on like selling music and concerts and things like that. There might be other billionaires out there, maybe the Beatles and so forth, but I think they have more of like a variety of where that billion came from, if they are billionaires, I'm not sure. But she has, in her 16 years, she's just 33. She started at 17 years of singing. She started at 16, I think. In those 17 years, she's produced song after song after song and done concerts and so when I read, for example, that at one point she had $750 million, that was her net worth maybe a few years ago. When I was looking into her life, I found this site where they were saying that, and I saw that humongous number, and I didn't feel envy or resentment or anything like that. It's like I almost felt like saying, congratulations in a sense, because she has earned it through her work ethic. So that is very praiseworthy of her. The problem with her is not, and see, the thing with her is that I believe that she has like what I'd call the Joseph calling on her, the dreamer calling. It's like she has that personality. She embraced it at some point very early on in her life, the dreamer personality that we've talked about. There are five personalities, basic personalities, and then there are two wild cards that you willingly adopt. So the five personalities, once again, are judge, visionary, conqueror, server, and organizer. And then there are two wild card personalities that you can embrace willingly. See, the first five, you're either born with them or you get an impartation of them, maybe from other people who've been born with it. But the other two is like you, and the impartation takes time. It's a process. But with the other two, it's like an instant thing. You embrace it, you believe it, you take it, and you go with it. And one of them is the dreamer personality, and the other one is the prosperer personality. And the dreamer personality is one where you're willing to dream of great things, even in the midst of smallness. And she was a dreamer, and she's like Joseph. And she, because of her dreaming, she drew a lot of envy, just like Joseph in the Bible, who drew the envy of his brothers, because he was a dreamer and there was something special about him. And I know that Taylor Swift knew from the very beginning that she had something special about her. And she was willing to dream of great things, of great stardom and popularity and success. And because of that, she always drew a lot of envy. And that envy began to kind of, and then she had a choice. Does she give in to the envy, or does she reject it and hold on to the dream? So she began to hold on to the dream and reject the envy, and reject the naysayers and the people who criticized her. But the problem is that as she was doing that, she created a barrier around her that prevented her ever embracing the idea that there's something limited about her, about how she's using her talent. If you catch what I'm saying, it's like because people were doing so many illegitimate attacks on her, it incorrect attacks on her, born out of envy, out of ignorance, out of stupidity or whatever, or resentment over her success, which is envy, then she began to justify her own musical decisions more and more and more. And now, if anyone comes and says something to her about the limited nature of her music, she doesn't receive it, because she's already built this barrier of protection against envy that not only keeps the envy stuff out, it also keeps the right criticism out. And the problem is she barely gets any righteous criticism. People who will say what she needs to hear. So that's what's going on with her. And that's what is why it's so difficult sometimes to kind of to judge her, to evaluate her, and to evaluate the people who evaluate her, because it's this strange situation where she is a legitimate dreamer and has had legitimate success through legitimate work ethic. But the work ethic And that comes from the organizer personality. She has a lot of organizer. She clearly has visionary, but her organizer personality has trumped her visionary personality. The organizer personality is very work-oriented. When you see people with a great work, a strong work ethic, you see people with a visionary, an organizer personality. And the problem is the organizer personality can become the enemy of the visionary personality when it gets corrupted. And that's what she is. She's just churning out music. And it's a lot of music, but it's at a very, very superficial level. And it's music that also has this subtle server personality embedded in it, but in a distorted way that enslaves you and entraps you in her world. Just like pastors, for example, in churches, tend to draw people to themselves, and then they become the pastor's flock. And then the flock can never get away from the pastor because they become, there's like a loyalty that gets established, that gets enforced on the flock, that you are supposed to be loyal to the pastor and you can't leave, you can't ever leave. And that's what happens in the matriarchal Christian churches in this country and throughout the world. And that's also what happens when you get into her world. You get trapped in her world. We did want to mention that. And then another story that came out about her, was posted on the Pitch. It's called pitchfork.com. That's the website. Not sure what it is. I don't even remember how I got this link, but, it says, the article reads, it was posted on November 2nd, 2023, and it reads, the headline, meet the Argentine Taylor Swift fans who have been camping out for the Eras tour since June. And then it says, public criticism, downpours, and rowdy soccer fans haven't stopped these outrageously devoted Swifties in their quest to get as close to their idol as possible. And this was by Diego something something. So it says here, we've been in this tent for 5 months, unquote, says a 21-year-old Swiftie waiting outside Buenos Aires' River Plate Stadium. The rumble of a mixing truck can be heard through the tent's thin fabric, while a large group of ants hopes for a snack to fall to the ground on a nearby sidewalk. The fan prefers to remain anonymous because her father doesn't know she's been spending many afternoons in between working a part-time job and taking college classes in a small makeshift encampment alongside her fellow Taylor Swift loyalists since June. I usually tell my dad I'm at a park drinking mate with somebody or visiting a friend of mine who lives near the stadium, she adds. She's hardly alone in her dedication ahead of Swift's three Buenos Aires shows, which kick off November 9th as part of the Latin American stretch of her Eras tour. Hundreds of fans have been occupying four tents outside the stadium, taking turns in carefully planned rotations. Most of the campers have general admission floor tickets, and the goal is to be as close to the stage as possible when the show begins. And this is part of that loyalty thing, the pastoral loyalty, and the pastoral thing has a lot to do with the server personality. Server and pastor are almost like interchangeable words in many ways. So the thing is that, these people, and then there's a certain loyalty that's demanded of them, and that's what creates the strong sense of loyalty that these people have, this commitment to her. And I know that, there have been loyal fans for different groups all over the place. But I don't know, there's something different about this. I did want to mention that one of the reasons why I wanted to mention this article is because it really struck my heart in a very kind of sad way when I read the thing about when it says we've been in this tent for 5 months, says a 21-year-old Swiftie waiting outside Buenos Aires's River Plate Stadium. and the reason why it struck my heart is well, it is very difficult to say because it's not something I can say out loud very strongly, but it kind of reminds me of something that happened to me when I was a young lad in Baltimore. It's something that I saw. Let me put it that way. It's something that I saw, and it had to do with Buenos Aires's River Plate Stadium. Because I was aware of River Plate Stadium, you know, at that age. I was a football or soccer, as it's called in America, a football fan from an early age. And I was very much aware of Buenos Aires and River Plate Stadium. That's where that's the big stadium. I think it's called Monumental Stadium in Buenos Aires. That's where River Plate, the football team, plays, and I maybe in some other Argentinian team. I'm not sure, but it's a very famous, world famous stadium. And it really, without going to the details, it really saddened my heart to see that's what the stadium is for. It's being used for, you know, for a Taylor Swift concert. And with people, that stadium houses like 70,000 fans, I think. It's a big stadium. That's where the final of the 78 World Cup was played when Argentina beat Holland. And so it is sad for me to see that stadium become the house of that, of a concert by an American who represents the deadness of American music now, and seeing this stadium filled with people following that. I don't know how to explain it, maybe if I told you what I saw when I was a kid, it would make more sense. But for some reason, I don't feel the freedom to say it in more detail. But it's like a sad ending to a story that seems so hopeful at the beginning. That's how the only way I can describe it. And when it says here, for example, I don't know why it says here, the rumble of a mixing truck can be heard through the tense, thin fabric while a large group of ants hopes for a snack to fall to the ground on a nearby sidewalk. And I don't know why this writer wrote it that way. Talked about ants, you know, waiting for a snack to fall to the ground on a nearby sidewalk. It's almost a figure of these fans, you know, waiting for this pathetic crumb to fall to the ground so that they can munch on it. And to me, it's amazing that, you know, there are so many people in Argentina, especially with the current situation of the economy there, that would be interested in paying. I think they would have to pay around $450 to, you know, for a ticket. And $450, when you convert it to, I think they have pesos in Buenos Aires, if I remember correctly, it's a whole bunch of dough. A whole bunch of money. So, and with their economic condition, obviously only the more well-off Argentinians would be able to attend. But apparently she was able to fill up the stadium because she already had the first concert. But the other reason why I wanted to mention this, it's interesting to me. It's not a coincidence that her tour, Eras, you know, which kind of, why did she call it Eras? I know it's not a coincidence. It's because this was the end of the American era. The American era ended officially on September the 6th, 2023. The American era in human history ended on that date. And she does this tour, like reminiscence tour, like, you know, like when somebody dies and people do the eulogy kind of thing. So she's doing her Eras tour to commemorate the death of America, the American era. And the first place she goes to outside the U.S. is Argentina. Why Argentina? You would think that the first place she'd go to on her international tour would be Europe, like maybe the UK, you know, because they speak English there. So she would have a fan base who speaks the language there, or maybe Germany or Italy or France or you know, some place like that. But she goes to Argentina, of all places. Argentina. And that is not a coincidence, because we've said it over and over and over again. The United States has become Argentina. And in history, they will look back at the fall of America and equate it with the fall of Argentina at the start of the 20th century. The same thing. And I know it's not a coincidence. That's why we wanted to mention this. And maybe someday I will mention what I saw when I was, I think I was 14 or so when I saw that. And that vision that I had, or that thing that I saw, drove my life for a long time. It was part of the vision that was burning inside of me for many years. But there was always an element of that vision that I didn't understand. And I kept asking why that part of that vision was there. And now I understand why, because now I see it being fulfilled, but in the worst possible way, the way I didn't expect it to be fulfilled. And now I understand why that part I didn't understand was there. It's as if I saw the end of America, but I didn't see it when I saw it. If that makes any sense, until now. Let's mention another article here. Our intention was to share some songs, but I'm not sure if we're going to have time to do that here. But we do need to share all these things. I know in my heart that we need to share these things. On the Daily Mail, on the 9th of November, they posted this. It says, Taylor Swift declares, quote, "I'm falling in love," unquote, as she takes her first tango in Argentina. Global megastar delights 70,000 fans with romantic surprise track Labyrinth on first leg of International Eras Tour. But there's no sign of Travis Kelce yet. You know, the guy that she is in love with, the tight end for the Kansas City Chiefs, for the American football player. So 70,000 fans filled the stadium in Spanish-speaking Argentina to listen to her. There are many things that I want to share from this article. They have tons of pictures of her, tons of pictures. I'm scrolling down and scrolling down. It never ends. Now, for some reason, they chose to include the lyrics of a song that she has out called Labyrinth in the article. So, and it kind of took me by surprise when as I was scrolling down. And I'm going to read part of the lyrics. It says, "It only hurts this much right now. What was what I was thinking the whole time. Breathe in, breathe through, breathe deep, breathe out. I'll be getting over you my whole life. You know how scared I am of elevators. Never trust it. If it rises fast, it can't last." And then it says, ooh, "I'm falling in love. I'm falling in love again. And I'm falling in love. I thought the plane was going down. How you turn it right around. It only feels this raw right now. Lost in the labyrinth of my mind. Break up, break free, break through, break down. You would break your back to make me break a smile. You know how much I hate that everybody just expects me to bounce back just like that." But the thing that caught me in this song is this part when it says, "It only feels this raw right now, lost in the labyrinth of my mind." When I read that, I said, oh my goodness, that's what I feel. That's what I was feeling every time I was listening to one of her songs when I was trying to kind of get a sense of her music. That I was getting trapped in her world. And she's saying it literally here, lost in the labyrinth of my mind. Yet I was getting lost in the labyrinth of her mind as I was getting inside, you know, into the song. And I know it's not a coincidence that she wrote this. And that's what she is. She's a big labyrinth. And her songs are this labyrinth that you go into, and then you get lost in this maze going in through, because you are walking around this place and you ask yourself, where am I going? You're going nowhere. You're trapped in here. You're trapped here. You're not going anywhere. You're just going in circles, back and forth inside her labyrinth, because the songs don't take you anywhere, don't project you towards something. They don't have that visionary component. See, she has like enough visionary to produce the music, to create the lyrics, the words of, about a story that she has in her mind about herself. But that's as far as it goes. But she does not project you, does not take you somewhere outside of herself. And that's what is so terrible about the music. And that's what I wanted to mention. But another thing we wanted to start talking about, I'm still scrolling through these, my goodness, it's like 45 photos of her in the concert. And it goes on and on and on. It's like her, you know, her musical production just goes on and on, but it's just the same thing multiple times. And on and on. And all the Argentinian fans I can see here, all with their cell phone, their mobiles, taking pictures of their idol. They're all very happy. And more pictures and more pictures. And then you get to the comments section. And this is when I wanted to share the comments, and I know this sounds dumb, but I believe that we have to share these things. So I went through the comments and I kind of copy pasted some of them, some of the ones that seemed interesting, because it tells you a lot about what's going on with her and her music. So one comment that I read from someone named. Who named herself, I think herself, Grisabella, from Wuthering Heights in the UK. She wrote, or I think it's a she, wrote, "Those sequined bodysuits, shiny tights, and boots are really not a good look on her. When she could wear any amazing outfit, why she chooses to look like a 12-year-old ice skater is beyond me." And you'd have to look at the pictures to see why she said that. And it must be a she, because I don't think a guy would normally comment on clothes and stuff like that, but and not in this kind of detailed way. She's saying, she's looking like a 12-year-old ice skater. And to me, it's not that bad. I don't know why. Maybe because I, not being female, I don't have certain... values about clothing or how people dress up the way a woman would, but the outfit doesn't really bother me as much as the music as we're sharing here. There's something wrong with the music. It takes you nowhere, and that's what bothers me, because it's entrapping a whole generation of people. It's a symbol of what's going wrong with the culture, with the music, the culture, everything, and why. And it shows the death, how the death of the culture is manifesting itself. That's what bothers me. The outfit doesn't bother me as much, but it's interesting to me that she focused on her being like a little girl, like a 12-year-old ice skater. And she's not the only one who says that. And then someone else wrote, this seems like irrelevant, but I have to say it because it needs to be said for some reason. It's this lady, Lisa Della Rico. I'm not sure if that's her real name, because I'm sure you can type in whatever you want. And her location apparently was Ohio, the U.S., Ohio, the place we were talking about, Cuyahoga and Fire Lake, and now the abortion on demand over there, and you can smoke all the cannabis you want. The red state, you know, that's, well, we've talked about that enough. So she wrote like a joke here. "A woman goes to the mechanic complaining of a terrible noise in her car. The mechanic looks, thinks for a second, and asks her, 'Have you tried turning your Taylor Swift playlist off?'" And I started chuckling when I read that. I just wanted to say that it kind of seems fitting. So, to be frank, the music itself is not awful. It just doesn't do anything for you. There's nothing memorable about for example, you hear Billie Jean once and you never forget it. Even if the lyrics sound strange and don't seem to say anything special or important, you know the song. There's something unique and special. It takes you somewhere. Just even if the lyrics don't seem to take you anywhere, the music takes you somewhere and you recognize it. When I hear Taylor Swift, there's nothing distinctive about it or special or unique. So it's not that the music is terrible, but it's terrible in the sense that it doesn't take you anywhere. And it's interesting, she makes a joke about a car. You know, a car is supposed to take you somewhere. So she's taking the car to the mechanic because the car is having some sort of trouble. And it's fitting because then he associates the mechanic in the joke, associates the trouble with Taylor Swift. Because getting on a Taylor Swift song is like taking a car that takes you nowhere, that's not working. There's someone who wrote somewhere in the U.S. This person wrote, "This poor girl just does not look good in those outfits." And that's the other thing that these are the sort of comments that she hears and that she shields herself from, you know, because it's like a lot of the times when those comments come against her like that, they are born out of envy. Like, oh, who is she? How dare she be so successful? Because, you know, she was a dreamer from an early age. And she kept facing these envy comments against her, and she shielded herself from those. So when people lash out like that against her, that just reinforces her determination to continue with her music the way she is. It's a non-productive comment. It doesn't produce anything beneficial, and it might be born out of envy. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. But it really doesn't matter. The outfit, as long as it's not too outrageous. Someone wrote from up north, I'm not sure what, somewhere up north, United Kingdom. That's how they wrote their location. And they said, "Sad that she has the mentality of a 12-year-old and the degeneration hero worships her." Again, another person from the UK saying there's something very childlike about her. And there's a mixture of that because, see, there's one thing that's very important. Things are so subtle here because there are two sides of it. And some people only see one side, some people only see the other, but they don't see the two sides. Dreamers are people who are very youthful and who maintain their, you could say, their childlike qualities throughout their life. There's something about dreamers that makes them not grow old. If you catch what I'm saying, maybe not physically, but something in their personality, their attitude, they never seem to be, because once you stop dreaming, there's a certain bitterness and kind of like staleness that creeps into you. And that's when you start looking and sounding old in everything you do and say. But there's a youthfulness to dreamers, to people who embrace the dreamer personality. And that's part of what people are seeing. But then there's the other side that she looks like that because her music has not matured and she has not developed into what she was supposed to become. So there are these two sides and a lot of dreamers are resented because of their youthfulness or their kind of almost juvenile behavior. I'm not sure how to explain it. There's something that it's like they don't match their age according to, you know, the human standards. and the way they act, the way they behave, because they are constantly dreaming. So it's like a combination of the two things. And then when Taylor Swift hears it, it's like inside her soul, she feels as if they're attacking her dreaming behavior or dreaming attitude. But most of the time, that's what they're doing. But in reality, there is a part of it that has a side of truth, that she has stayed immature and has not developed into what she's supposed to be. Someone else wrote in Portland. Portland didn't say where. Portland could have been Portland, Maine, Portland, Oregon, or Portland in some other country. Who knows? Kim Crandall, I think her name is. She wrote, "I just don't get the hype." It's like the same thing with me. It's like, I don't get it. And then someone replied to her, Ezio from the Animus SL, United Kingdom. Not sure what that means. And Ezio wrote, "That's how I feel about 99% of musicians nowadays." And this Ezio kind of hit it right on the nail, that Taylor Swift is a representation of all of American music nowadays, and most modern music, because you know America has been the leader, you could say, in music all this time. So what you say about American music, in a certain sense, is what you say about all of world music. But I think there's going to be a separation, and the rest of the world is going to start developing at a higher level, and American music is just going to stay at this stagnant level. And then Linda Cook from Richmond, I guess Virginia in the U.S., or there might be other Richmonds out there, but Linda Cook wrote, "You're not alone," in reply to those statements. So, like, all three people who seem to not understand the hype and who are aware that this is what that's the state of music right now. And then someone named himself Vasilikik in Voliagmeni, Greece. Never heard of that place. Voliagmeni, Greece, wrote, "Taylor is over 30 years old but acts like she's a 13-year-old. So again, someone from, this time not the UK, but from Greece, in other words, from Europe, saying there's something not mature about her. And again, that could mean an attack on her dreamer personality or an awareness that she has not developed musically, that developed into what she was supposed to be. And then someone who named themselves Penny B, in Great Dunmo, in the UK, wrote, "There's something not quite right about her. She has numerous relationships that don't last 5 minutes. She looks okay, but is not pretty or beautiful. She's the female version of Harry Styles." And I'm not sure what that means, because I barely know what Harry Styles sounds like. I've seen his pictures. I recognize him in a police lineup, but other than that, I have no idea what he sounds like or what his music is about. So I have no idea what this person meant by that. But the thing is, see, there's a mixture of good and bad in that comment. Like, there's something not quite right about her. It's like there's, so she doesn't know how to, I'm assuming it's a she. She does not know what to point, what exactly is not right, but there's something not right. So they just can't put it in words. But then she goes to the attack on her personal life. She has numerous relationships that don't last 5 minutes. Well, she did have one that lasted 6 years, the one that just ended, I think. But she did have a lot of, you know, boyfriends before that. And she looks okay, but is not pretty or beautiful. And again, it's like, why do you go there? I mean, what does it matter? why even go there? And then see Taylor Swift hear something like that. Then she goes, envy, envy, envy. And then she goes, I don't care, I don't care, I don't care. And that's when the good criticism gets cut off in her mind, even if, if it's coming towards her. Someone else who called himself Violinist 99 from Carter in the U.S. Carter, I don't know what that place is or where, wrote, not here to say T is a, or I guess Taylor, is a bad person. Don't know her. Fans can be rabid, immature, vicious, with childish insults. What I'm saying is this. Too much of this overkill is drowning out loads of great dormant talent. It's a big world. There should be room, fair game for everyone. And it's interesting. This person is saying, there are a lot of comments born out of envy about her. But what matters is that too much of this is overkill is drowning out loads of great dormant talent. It's a big world. So there's a talent out there that's not being tapped into. And I think, if I'm not misinterpreting this comment, what this person is saying is that Taylor Swift is drawing so much popularity towards her that the people who need to be supported, who have a deeper development of the talent, are not being enabled. Because all this attention, all these resources, like all these 70,000 in Argentina, all these people are pouring their time and their money, their resources into that labyrinth that they can never get out of. And then all this dormant talent remains untapped or unsupported. The person finishes by saying, common sense, entertainers should not direct my political views. Their opinions are just that. They don't sway my independent thought and study of the facts. Look at our world and how it's going. Think. So kind of in a strange way, this person is hitting all the points because the person is saying there's a world out there and that's what we should be focusing on the world out there, not on this labyrinth of Taylor Swift's mind. It's as if there's more to the world, than just your own world. So in kind of maybe, I don't know if confusing or incomplete way, this person is hitting the points. And then someone replied to that comment, someone who called him or herself Cupcake 323 from Texas, wrote, by the comments, the haters are by far more vicious than any of her fans commenting. A bunch of middle-aged women who are jealous of this young woman's success and vigor for life. So it's again, there's this person is pointing out that a lot of the comments are born out of envy that is driven by that dreamer personality, just like in the Bible story that Joseph drew the envy of his brothers because he was a dreamer. But the thing is, that doesn't mean all the comments are wrong or that there's not something to comment on. And then Roselle 72, that's how she called herself, from the back of beyond United Kingdom. Sure, that's not a real place. It wrote, why is she kissing her own arm? It's cringeworthy. And that's because in one of the photos, she's like doing this bicep thing, showing her biceps and then kissing the biceps. I'm not sure why she does that. But I go, I don't care. It doesn't matter. But when I saw that, I see it's like a part of the charm of her soul. There's something charming about her soul. And vivacious and charming, and I see that as now that silly kissing of the arm as an outgrowth of that charm, silly, vivacious soul that she has, and I don't see that as necessarily bad. But so that's the problem. People get caught up in certain things about her that are not relevant, And then they criticize her for that, and that closes her off to protect herself from all this negative criticism. And then the actual criticism that needs to get through doesn't get through. Then someone wrote from Springfield in the U.S., betting most of the negative comments belong to people that haven't seen her perform. Wife and I are all in bombers that I think both Travis and Taylor are great. Enjoy talking to our kids and grandchildren about the latest news. It's fun in a troubling world. And when I read that, I said, oh my goodness. It's a person who is... See, when once you get into her world, you either embrace what she's offering and allow yourself to get trapped in her world, or you back away and say there's something not right. And these people... obviously, because there's something charming about her, that I keep saying that there's something beautiful about her soul. That when you see it, you go, oh yeah. But once you get in there, you become trapped. And it's not like she's like the devil, as I've said, you know, casting a spell on you. It's not like that. It's just she's just being her natural self, and it draws to you. But when you're inside, then you are trapped. And this is what happened to them. You know, they got exposed to her. They saw the charm and the beauty of her soul, and then they got engrossed in it. And now they say Travis and Taylor are great. Travis was endorsing the rape by injection, the so-called vaccines. He's promoting them in television adverts. And he's doing the bicep thing, you know, like showing his Band-Aid. I was watching one of these adverts on television with the Band-Aid, and that's kind of like has been the sign of you proving to the world that you are one of them. And I said, oh my goodness, if there's ever been anything like the mark of the beast, as they say in the Bible, that Band-Aid would be it. You know, it's this people showing the Band-Aid after having taken the injection, you know, like as if to say, I'm one of you. Just see that I'm hip. I'm with the crowd. I'm in, and I'm one of you. And so it's sad that these people say Travis and Taylor are great. And then they say, enjoy talking to our kids and grandchildren about the latest news. Which is such an odd thing. It's kind of ironic that in a strange way, they are being taken out into the world through Taylor music, through Taylor and Travis, but not because of the music, but because of what, because of their political activism outside of music. Or whatever they do outside of music, and that's what's taking them, but it's taking them to hell and to the wrong place. But it's not because of the music. So it seems like a very disjointed comment. Why do they say, enjoy talking to our kids and grandchildren about the latest news? But it is in connection to what they see in Travis doing the adverts, I guess, and Taylor doing her political activism outside of music, but it's not the music itself that's taking them to consider the world, if you catch what I'm saying. So it's very, very confusing. And then other people, and someone in Boston wrote, Miss Cynical, as there is, and nothing enchanting about her. It's all about money and PR, with her fans being the duped idiots. And that's not it. That's not what she is about. She's not there. When he says there's nothing enchanting about her, that's wrong. Why are the 70,000 fans in Argentina camping out to watch her in Buenos Aires' River Plate Stadium? There's definitely something enchanting about her. But it's these comments, and it's all about money. See, there's that thing. It's almost the envy coming out. All about money and PR, with her fans being the duped idiots. Yes, and they are duped idiots, but you know they were duped idiots before listening to her music. It's not that Taylor is duping them. They're all duped. She's duped, and they're duped, and they're just, you know, one is singing to the other dupe people. But the comment is just, it's ironic that he accuses her of being cynical, yet he is being very cynical in his own comment. And accusing her of something that's not like that. She's not in it for the money. She's hardworking, she's dedicated, and she's made a whole bunch of money, but you can see it. She's not about the money. She just enjoys what she's doing, and she's doing a lot of it. It's just the wrong thing that she's doing. And then someone wrote in Gondor, the UK, saying, Taylor Swift is so beige, it hurts. And to be frank, maybe I should know this, but I have no idea what this person meant by beige. Maybe blasé, I'm not sure. But again, people in Europe seem to be getting the sense that there's something like low quality about this or something not quite right about it. More than people in the U.S., the people in the comments in the U.S. are mostly, not all of them, but they tend to lean towards superficial stuff and envy. But the ones from Europe seem to be getting a better sense of, oh, there's something not quite right about this. Someone wrote from they wrote unfortunate Californian. That's their location in the U.S. And this person wrote, she certainly seems like an active, energetic singer, though I've never heard her sing myself. So see, that this person is saying he recognizes what I also recognize. She is very energetic. She's working. She's a hard worker. And kudos to her for that. But this person has never heard her sing. So it's like, so you can see that on the surface without listening to her music. It's only when you listen to her music that you get exposed to that labyrinth thing about her. And then someone in Atlanta wrote, I don't understand all the hate. Even if you don't care for her music, she's an extremely hard worker who's generous and kind. See, the thing is, the hardworking, and that can confuse you. If you just go for her and her charm and all these things, that there's nothing explicitly negative about all of that, then you start embracing the music. And then you get trapped in her labyrinth because she is a hard worker and it's a very good quality about her. And the thing about her being generous and kind, I don't see her as elitist or arrogant or a person who discriminates someone else because they're poor or anything like that. There's something very down to earth about her. And I think that's also another thing that appeals to her followers. There is a generous quality about her. I don't know how to explain. There's something generous and kind about her. I can see it. And that's the thing. You see that and you get confused. And then you embrace her music and then you get trapped in her labyrinth. Inadvertently, it's not that she's doing it on purpose. And then this person writes, she supports other artists and is a good friend to her friends. And she's a great role model. It's a great role model if you agree with her political views. And if you don't agree with her political views, she definitely is not a great role model. And then someone wrote, the same person from Carter, U.S., wrote, I don't see it as hate. It's missing dimension. Although some of these fans are silly pit bulls and make no points except hate towards others, tells me a lot. So there's something, this person's again saying, I don't hate her. It's just there's a missing dimension. Like her music misses a certain dimension. And then someone in Toronto wrote, they're just hateful, envious people. They bother to spend all the spare time they have in their fruitless lives reading every Daily Mail article about Taylor so they can say they are not interested in Taylor. They're transparently pathetic. So again, someone noticing the criticism coming at her is coming from a perspective of envy. Therefore, her music is good. See how complicated it is? And that's the problem with living in the world of simple labels. So, okay, if this is not good, if this is not this, then if you can put a label of envy on this, then anything that's opposite of that is the right answer. It's a very simplistic world, and that's why it's very confusing to see what Taylor Swift really represents. And then someone wrote from New York saying she donates millions to organizations as well as helps her crew. So she must be a very generous person. She's just, you know, and I'm sure her donations are to organizations that promote leftist nonsense. But she's, quote, trying, you know, to make a change, make a difference. It's just the wrong difference. But it just goes to her generosity. She is not stingy with her money. She's not clinging to it. She is generous with it. But that doesn't justify the labyrinth that you get trapped in when you hear her music. Now, someone in the Pacific Northwest wrote, I have, of the U.S., I've heard her music. Standards have certainly dropped over the years. Will never, ever understand her appeal. So, again, you know, those of us who've grown up, you know, listening to music from other eras, speaking of the name of her tour, from other eras, we compare it to this and go, no, definitely not. There is a missing dimension there. And then someone wrote from Boston in the U.S., she's a freaking giant. Women are not supposed to be 6 feet tall. It's not feminine at all. You know, it's a stupid comment. And you say, well, where does that come from? And I think in part is that envy that, no, she's supposed to be small. Why is she making herself big? That's what he's saying without realizing it. And he so it's again that envy against the dreamer personality, the person who dreams of being big whilst being small, and this is what he's channeling without realizing it, that resentment against someone who is supposed to be small, dreaming of being big. He's just, you know, focusing on the literal height, but it's a reflection of that same attitude of hating the dreamer. And then someone wrote from the U.S., nothing appealing about Chicken Little. Not sure why he calls her that. Immature with a stale haircut. So again, pointing the immaturity, but then doing this sniper attack on her like a sniper personal attack on her. Stale haircut. Who cares about the haircut? I don't see anything stale about it. Maybe because I'm a man and I don't focus on haircuts and stuff like that the way women do. I'm pretty sure this is a lady. But immature with a stale haircut. Who cares about the haircut? But when you combine that, so there's something valid about the immature statement, but not because she's immature like a little child, because this person is resenting the youthful nature of a dreamer. But that does not mean that there is something immature about the music. The music never developed. And then someone in the U.S. also wrote, does she keep the 8-year-old hairstyle that she's had for 2 decades to try and look like a teenager? She's 36. Well, she's actually 33. But again, the same thing. This attack on the dreamer. And this is one thing that you will be seeing in America more and more and more as the years go by. Now that the dreamer personality of America died on September 11th, that's when New Jersey died, as we tried to explain in the previous audio snippets. And you will see that attack on the dreamer more and more and more and more. We used to be the land where you could dream, you know, the American dream, you know, the typical expression of someone who dreams of becoming great and successful from rags to riches and all that stuff. But all of that is dead now. And from now on, you will see the American culture becoming much more aggressive against dreamers to try to destroy them and for the wrong reasons. And the last thing we want to mention, we didn't get to the songs that we wanted to talk about, and I apologize for that. But I do feel that we needed to say all these things. They are necessary. They need to be said. You may not be listening by now. I may be talking to myself. But let me just share this last story. And this is very relevant to me. I know when I read this, I knew this was significant. This was posted on the 10th of November, 2023, the day before this recording. And it was on the Daily Mail, and the headline reads, "Picture Exclusive: Taylor Swift cancels show in Buenos Aires due to rainy weather after boyfriend Travis Kelce was seen arriving to support singer." Quote, "I'm never going to endanger my fans." So Taylor, 33, released a statement to fans on Friday ahead of her show. Comes after hours after her NFL boyfriend, Travis Kelce, touched down to see her. The show will be rescheduled for Sunday, November the 12th. In other words, tomorrow, the day after this recording. And let me read what happened here. It says the decision to move the show was made after Buenos Aires was hit with monsoon-like conditions, as well as thunder and lightning, and came shortly after Kelce flew in to see his lover in action. Such a creepy way of saying flew in to see his lover in action. It sounds so creepy. But the thing is that I know this is not a coincidence that her second show was canceled right after her man arrived in Argentina to see her. It's as if the truth sent this monsoon into Buenos Aires with thunder and lightning to cancel the show, to say there's nothing masculine about this presentation that's being made. If you catch what I'm saying, this very masculine football player, American football player, tall and strong and powerful athlete, when he arrived to say, "I am part of Taylor Swift, I represent Taylor Swift, I come with Taylor Swift," then the truth sent this unusual weather situation into Buenos Aires to cancel the show. As if to say, Taylor Swift has nothing masculine about her. She is matriarchal music at its height. That's what she is, matriarchal music. The music, see, the matriarchal mindset is focused on server and organizer. Those are the two female personalities. That's what we mean by matriarchal, when those two rule over the other three, which are masculine in nature. This has nothing to do with literal gender. So she is very organizer oriented, work ethic. I'm sure she plans her days very carefully. She's very, very organized and very perfectionist and very goal-oriented. You know, that's all the qualities of an organizer. They're goal-oriented. They set a goal, and then they aim for reaching the goal and reaching quotas and things like that. That's what they aim for, reaching those goals that they set, those standards that they set for themselves, and then she has a server personality in how she brings people into herself and makes them part of her flock. She draws them into her world, and then they become loyal to her, and then they can never escape from the labyrinth that she puts them in inadvertently. She doesn't do it on purpose. It just happens. All the songs are about relationships, soulish relationships, soul-related, emotional relationships between people, back and forth, between people. It's all like trapped in your little, as they say, the Hispanics say, their own telenovela, their own soap opera, their own, world of relationships, and he said this, and she said this, and he dumped her, and he was unfaithful to her, she was unfaithful to him, and all this stuff about, all this endless stuff about things that take you nowhere. just that's what soulish relationships are, emotional relationships, and that's what the server personality thrives in because it's all about pleasing each other. That's what a server does. You know, I please you. That's what a waiter is there to please you. And then becomes this, I please you, then you please me, and this back and forth. And they're all feeding their emotional energies, all based on emotional relationships. See, people who are the visionary personality, which is also very emotional, doesn't feed its emotions off of friendships. It feeds off of the vision that the person has. That's what drives the person, the vision. So he or she could be alone in the world, but the vision drives him or her, and drives his or her emotions and channels him like a river, to drive throughout towards that vision. A person who's trapped in a server personality atmosphere is as his or her emotions are driven off of who likes me. If they don't like me, then I'm nobody. If I'm liked, then I feel good. And it's constantly craving this approval and attention and that's why all these people are out there just writing out their lives on social media because they need the attention. They need to be emotionally loved by someone else. And that's why they draw them into their own world. It's a very very smothering, you know, it's like a smothering mother that just takes you over and just dominates over your life. That's what the server personality does, and that's what she does with her music. So she is the epitome. She has the two female personalities just like full throttle. The server personality, because all her songs are about relationships. That's all they are about breakups and he likes me, she doesn't like me. And there's a little bit of introspection there every now and then, like that anti-hero song that I barely remember because her music is not memorable, at least to me. It doesn't, it's like it goes in one ear, not the other, but there was something about the song that the little I heard that I remember that there was some sort of self-reflection in there. It was more than just relationships and boyfriends, girlfriends stuff. But it's all introspective that just traps you inside that world. It doesn't project you anywhere. So she is the epitome of the matriarchal music. That's what matriarchal music looks like. It's Taylor Swift. She has those two things. And interesting, she said, we've rescheduled tonight's Buenos Aires show for Sunday due to the weather being so truly chaotic. It would be unsafe to try and put on this concert. Good news is I get to stay in Argentina longer. And I'm pretty sure, I don't know why, this might sound like a publicity thing. She's saying, oh, I love Argentina, I want to stay longer. But I actually believe that she sincerely loves being in Argentina because she sees a connection. Argentina is the fallen America. It's a reflection of the fallen America. And she's a reflection of the music that fallen America produces, the fallen matriarchal America. So that's why she feels an affinity for Argentina. In Argentina, there's something special. I used to love the people of Argentina, a love very profound. You have no idea how profound it was. So there's something special, charming about Argentina, but Argentina is dead. It is a third world country that refused to change, and decayed and died. And she's drawn to that. But there is a natural draw that Argentina used to have. It just doesn't have it anymore, at least for me. But I don't know how often monsoons hit Argentina. You know, when I've heard of mountain monsoons, it's usually the Philippines or Vietnam or someplace like that. So I know this is more than just happenstance. I know this is a very relevant thing that happened, and it's not a coincidence. And it happened just as her male counterpart showed up in Argentina, as if to say, there's nothing male about this. This is just female and matriarchal. There's nothing masculine about it. And that's what we wanted to share regarding this story. And then the as you read the article about her show in Argentina, it's all about what she was wearing and this and that and the other. And you know, about her relationship with Travis. So it's all very like reading People magazine kind of thing. It's all about soulish relationships, emotional friendships and all that. And that's why Matthew Perry died recently, you know, because it's a judgment on all of that. All that focus on soul relationships, emotional relationships between people that don't go anywhere. Because he was the star of that show called Friends, that kind of glorified that mindset of emotional relationships that don't take you anywhere. It's like a soap opera. It's like watching a soap opera. And then everybody's lives is like a soap opera. And you watch a soap opera, and all you care about is that Jill, finally tell the truth to Jack about such and such thing. Or did Victor follow through with his plot to do this or that or the other? And you get trapped in the soap opera world, but that soap opera world is not going anywhere. There's no underlying message, no underlying lesson to learn. What's the moral of the story? There's nothing there. It's all just people doing things to each other and with each other, and it never ends. It's a labyrinth. And that's what she is, and that's why her song is called The Labyrinth. And I know she doesn't realize it, but she kind of prophetically, you could say, wrote about herself when she gave it that title. And then she wrote about the labyrinth in her mind because that's where she is. And that's where she takes us with every song of hers. And so we've talked about many things, but I hope that you see the purpose and the usefulness of talking about these things, because it just helps to. I just saw it in my head right now. It's this like fog is being kind of just separated out, like just being dispersed. Like there's this fog, and then something like a wind blowing and just cutting through the fog and making it split on the left side and the right side to clear up the field in front of you. And that's how I feel about the things we've been talking about, if that makes any sense. So we've run way long, and hopefully the next time we will get to talk about some specific songs like we did in the first part of this music stuff that we're doing. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for listening.